Welcome to the Education Gadfly Show. Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, the Decider-in-Chief, Rick Hess.
What the heck's Decider-in-Chief, man? I don't even get this.
Rick, come on. This is, this is President Bush. He's the Decider-in-Chief. He said, I'm the Decider, and we're saying you're the Decider.
I try very hard not to decide hardly anything.
Yes, well, we report, you decide it. That's what we do.
Okay.
So did you see that Angelina Jolie interview with Anderson Cooper the other night? Pretty intense, wasn't it?
I missed it. What was intense about it?
You missed it. Well, I mean, there was all kinds of topics covered, including, the education of their new baby.
Well, I do have to say that I like this whole prenatal in Namibia thing.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that Angelina and Brad lift off, they go to Namibia. By keeping the kid there, hopefully they stay a couple of years. I guess they're back out of Namibia now, but if they get back,
yeah,
they could relieve the burdens on Head Start and early child care. Because, especially out west, these are the kinds of programs mm-hmm. where it's the little, Angelina Jolie's of the world. We're soaking up all the resources, and there's nothing left to close the achievement gap.
I see. You say this, and now all these middle-class, upper-middle-class parents are going to feel like they have to fly to Namibia for prenatal.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's out of control.
It really ratchets up the pressure.
Well, listeners, tell us what you think about Angelina Jolie and her little precious one. Shoot us a line at letters@edexcellence.net. Now let's get going, Rick. We're going to start with a game of Pardon the Gadfly. Then we have an interview with Jenna Kahn, who is a 21-year-old University of Iowa student studying to be an elementary school teacher, who told the Des Moines Register, you'll really like this, teachers don't get paid crap. We're going to talk about that quote. And finally, our weird correspondent, Liam, will serve up a dose of education news of the year. So, let's play Pardon the Gadfly. What's our first topic?
All right. Topic number one, Mike. Florida's accountability system shows the Sunshine State is making big-time academic gains in its schools, but the NCLB data are far less rosy. In fact, the federal accountability system suggests that many Florida schools are actually getting worse. Jeb Bush is paying no attention to the bad news wafting south from D.C., ignoring the NCLB results. Mike, is Bush right to do so?
Well, this was pretty funny. He had a quote in the paper that said, no offense to anyone in Washington, D.C., but .. You wonder who that quote was directed at.
Mm-hmm.
Certain kin of his. Well, look, obviously we've known for a long time that Florida system and the No Child Left Behind system are very different. Florida cares about growth over time, whether or not students are learning more at the end of the year than they were at the beginning of the year.
What a crazy thing to focus on.
A crazy notion. No Child Left Behind is focused on achievement gaps. So they come out to different conclusions. But appropriately, look, without the No Child Left Behind system, you unfortunately have this situation in Florida where you could have some growth over time with some students, a certain subgroups of students, maybe just the white students in the school, but you could still have African American or Hispanic students doing poorly, and the school could get an A or a B.
Well, Mike, all accountability systems are imperfect. They're basically fictions or efforts to try to come up with useful understanding of how to measure progress. But, Florida's system seems to capture, to me, much more what we care about. Our schools helping kids learn more during the course of the year. NCLB's system is saying if we take a random cross-section of your kids, we look at them at a given point in time, and then we're going to identify schools which are helping the kids make progress as failing.
All right, but here's the thing. I mean, some of these schools in Florida that are getting an A or a B, their students are still not, they're still many, many years behind grade level. These schools still might be, these kids are struggling, and under No Child Left Behind, if they get labeled as in need of improvement, they get access to things like free tutoring. That's a good thing.
Huh. So if you go to a weight coach, Mike, and you're benching 20 pounds, and at the end of it, you're benching 60 pounds,
Rick, but you should
be benching 100, you're still not there.
Thank you. The buzzer has sounded.
I don't get it. All right.
Okay, topic number two, Rick. Ohio, voucher action. Local newspapers have been giving front page coverage to stories about families, quote, gaming the state's new voucher program in various ways. Both public school and private school families have been enrolling their kids in failing public schools in order to qualify for the voucher. So what do we learn from this?
Not much. We learned that people take advantage of government programs when they can. Well, what's astonishing is that any choice advocates or conservatives are concerned about this. These are the same folks who 10, 15 years ago were reminding us all that people cheated on welfare, that there were welfare queens out there, and we needed to keep an eye out to make sure people didn't take advantage. Now they're shocked that when they offer people a chance to help their kids, that they're going to cheat the system and game it. I mean, this is totally expected. And if there's problems, it shows that the system is poorly designed, because you should expect people to do these things.
All right, and I think a little compassion is in order. I mean, these are families trying to get their kids a decent education. You have a situation, for example, where a child is in a pretty okay elementary school. Then they transfer next year. They're supposed to go to a really bad middle school. Well, because they weren't enrolled in that middle school yet, they are not eligible for a voucher. That doesn't seem very fair. So, you know, this isn't so much a problem of the families, I think, being cheats, as much as the legislators not thinking through this program very well.
Well, right. And that's exactly right. Government programs should be written on the assumption that people are going to take every advantage they can. We see it with taxes all the time and everything else. If you've written a law which is easy for people to take advantage of in ways you didn't mean for them to, the law's got a problem.
That's right. And look, you know, especially when it comes to vouchers, maybe what we need to learn is tying vouchers to failing schools, which, you know, is kind of makes sense and is appealing politically. When you work it out in the real world, it has these serious problems.
Did I just hear you bash No Child Left Behind, Mike?
You won't get an answer to that. The buzzer has sounded. Okay. Good.
All right.
What's our last topic?
Mike, final topic. Al Gore. I like Al Gore. Especially, I like the bearded Al Gore.
Did
anyway,
you like the bearded face?
It was kind of fun.
Yeah,
that added panache. All right,
can you grow a beard?
It comes in kind of heinous. I
thought it
say.
Would. I thought it would.
I haven't. I used to need it when I was like 20 to get in.
Yeah.
But to get into clubs and stuff, but I pretty much took it off at 21. Okay. Anyway, Al Gore's new movie, Mike, An Inconvenient Truth, is indisputable proof of at least two things. One, Al Gore is a master teacher.
That's right.
And two, technology can be harnessed in innovative ways to educate the masses, or at least the masses who go to elite art films about global warming. Mike, why aren't we using more technology in classrooms today?
It's a good question. I mean, what's great about this documentary, he uses all these great graphics and charts and pictures and maps, and it's a very compelling teaching tool. And yet you don't see that in many classrooms. You know, instead, what we have is, at the best case, is we expect teachers to go out to the web and grab different pieces of digital content, put it together in the lesson plans. It's way too much to expect individual teachers to do that. Now, why don't we have prepackaged lessons like this? Look, for a number of reasons. I can think of at least five, but let me give you a few. One,
please,
is that we don't have national standards, as you know, and so therefore, you know, the market's very splintered by 50 different standards and tests, and nobody wants to put up the upfront investment. Number two, we don't spend enough money in R&D, and the dumb 65% solution idea is going to only make it worse. And number three, teacher unions are afraid of technology that they're going to lose jobs.
Whew, that was pretty much a conventional lineup, wasn't it? I got to agree with you on 65%, but talk about, bringing out an old hobby horse to ride, the national standards. So you're telling me that we don't have enough... Mike's riding his hobby horse here. You're telling me we don't have enough schools teaching intro algebra, not enough teachers teaching Civil War for folks to make money investing in replicable, effective multimedia lesson plans?
Yeah.
I don't buy it for a second.
Oh, come on. The content is very different state to state.
The problem is we push all our money in the school systems into salary. We shut out entrepreneurs. We frown upon people who are making profits off of this stuff. And we set a whole lot of barriers through adoption and you know, purchasing procedures to make it real difficult for innovators to get in. So, I don't know about this national standard
that
stuff.
That sounded like a hobby horse of your own.
Okay, well, we're riding off into the sunset.
All right, well, good, because that is it for Pardon the Gadfly. Now we turn to our interview. As we said, we're going to the front lines to talk with Jenna Kahn, a 21-year-old student at the University of Iowa. She is studying to be an elementary school teacher.
Aww.
Let's see what she thinks about teacher testing.
Good for her.
Let's take a listen. Jenna, welcome to the Education Gadfly Show. So, Jenna, we came across your name this week when we read a Des Moines Register article about Iowa instituting a teacher test for the first time. Now, this is required under the No Child Left Behind Act. What caught our eye was your complaint about the cost of these tests to be paid for by students like you. In fact, you told the paper, quote, "It doesn't sound like a lot of money, but teachers are paid crap." Now, can you explain that statement? What's your complaint?
Yeah, teachers... are paid very little. I mean, that's no surprise, you know, and I really think it's important that we focus more on, like, classroom management and other skills. There's so much that goes into teaching that isn't just academic. You know, you can't be a good teacher if you're just good at science and math and all that stuff. It's really important to have an understanding of the classroom environment itself and be able to think on your feet, and you can't really test that with, you know, a skills-based test like the SAT or the ACT or, in this case, the Praxis, too.
Okay.
Well, now that's fair. That certainly you can't test everything that's important with one of these tests. But isn't it important to make sure that teachers do have those basic skills in reading and math, and you know that they understand the content area they're going to be teaching to their students, especially since students now have to pass tests?
That is really important. But I think that if school districts were able to push more money into like professional workshops and stuff, and allow teachers to kind of get out and continue their education as they're teaching, it would be a lot more beneficial. And I mean, in order to get into the College of Education at the University of Iowa, you were required to take the Praxis 1. So a lot of times, to get into a program, you have to take a standardized test. And I think that if you pass that, then it shouldn't, you couldn't have to take another one, to prove, oh, I know all this stuff still, to get your license.
Okay, so for colleges that do require that kind of entrance exam, you're saying you've already got that covered. Well, fair enough. Now, in the same article, an Iowa State student explained her support for teacher testing by saying, quote, "I know a lot of kids who went to college to be teachers who drank their way through." Now, do you think this is a problem, Jenna? Do you think there's a lot of future teachers of America out there drinking their way through college?
Yeah, I mean, being a teacher is an interesting field because it's not extremely academically challenging, like say being a doctor or an engineer is, but it's challenging in a much different way. And I think that teaching as a profession a lot of times isn't seen as a profession. I've had people tell me, well, you can color, right? So you can be an educator.
That's
not the case. You know, there's so much, until you're in the classroom and in that environment, and it's completely unique. And I don't even think that a standardized test is in any way, shape, or form prepare you for what it is. And a lot of people decide that, you know, after student teaching, this isn't exactly for me. Because, again, it's taking what you learn in your classroom and, you know, in the university programs and stuff and applying that in the classroom setting, and it's completely different.
Well, I think we're in agreement then, Jenna. You know, we want to make sure that people who are kind of blowing off their courses or not taking it seriously or think it's somehow an easy job, that those people get weeded out before they get into the classroom. And it sounds like, you know, you're right. Student teaching is one way to do that. And maybe in some cases, a test that might weed out some of the people who aren't prepared could do that too. All right, we just have one more question for you, Jenna. This one's a little bit lighthearted, but I do want to know, do you think that when you get into the elementary school classroom, do you think it's appropriate to use the word crap?
Not in an elementary school classroom, although we have kids that use it all the time, and we have to constantly remind them that it is not appropriate. But, I mean, teachers are playing the parenting role now, and so, I mean, you really have to be prepared for that, too.
All right, well, we'll try to make sure that your students don't read that newspaper article, then, and see that word. All right, good. Well, Jenna, we really appreciate you joining us, and I hope you'll maybe come back sometime soon.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jenna. So, Rick, what do you think about what Jenna had to say?
Oh, man, she's pretty on the ball, I got to say. But a couple things. First, you know, Jenna was complaining, this whole thing about not making crap, you know? I mean, in Iowa, starting teachers make about $30,000 a year. Now, you at this Fordham Factory of Education Research have got all these people out of elite East Coast universities. And most of them start, like at my shop at AEI, we start them frequently at $27,000, $28,000. So, in fact, these teachers are starting with more money than people coming out of other very good colleges and going into prestigious jobs. Two other things. One, if these folks are already passing the practice exam before they go into ed school, then obviously there's limits on how much we actually expect ed schools to add. I think that's something that we ought to be thinking about. And two, if Jenna and her colleagues...
I think you're under three.
Oh, well, then there we go, baby. And then Jenna and her colleagues are telling us that there's no way to tell good teachers from bad. What the hell are we worrying about training them in these little teacher and prep classrooms?
Well, but I think it's compelling that you want to make sure teachers have basic skills, but you can't even count to three, Rick, and you did okay in the classroom. So I'm not sure what that means.
So your basic skills are overrated. It's fine.
So tell me the truth, Rick. Did you ever use the word crap in the classroom?
Hell yeah, baby. But I always felt bad about it afterwards.
Okay, as well you should have. Well, it is now time for everybody's favorite education news of the weird with our special correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what are you eating and why do you look so angry?
I'm eating a fluffernutter sandwich, Mike. One of my favorites. Two slices of fresh bread, slathered with peanut butter, and fluff. A condiment made of corn syrup, sugar, dried egg white, and vanilla flavoring. Mmm, delicious. I'm angry because apparently the fluffernutter is under attack. Massachusetts State Senator Jarrett T. Barrios is trying to ban it from the state schools. He's mad because some schools are offering students fluffernutters as a healthy alternative to the regular cafeteria lunches. But Barrios doesn't think the fluffernutter qualifies as nutritious. Yet Don Durkee, president of the company that produces fluff, said, quote, "I've been eating fluff nearly my entire life." And Durkee's 80 years old. How bad can the stuff be, Barrios? Rick, what's with this legislative meddling in schools? And can you say fluffernutter three times fast?
I'm actually shocked to hear about this, because I've got about a quart plastic jug of fluffernutter in my cup. And you know, if you take those whole wheat potato rolls, and you do some low-fat peanut butter and some fluffernutter, you know, and some fluff, it's actually a highly nutritious, fiber-filled snack that is frequently used by folks, say, after running or lifting. So, I don't know. I think this is Jarrett Barrios. I think the guy feels bad about his name. He's trying to make all these kids in Massachusetts as unhappy as this cat. And I wish he would back off just a little. We got all these other fat kids already, and he's coming down with fluff.
You know, and you know, Rick, you already pointed out that we don't pay our people very much around here at Fordham. But you know what? We do provide free fluffernutter sandwiches every day, which makes up for it. And you see how happy Liam is with that. He just says, just don't take his fluff away. Well, I think that is all the time we have for this week.
Don't take my fluff away. I like that.
You like that?
That could be a motto.
It is a motto. The Fluffernutter Society. That is all the time we have. Thank you, Buzzer, and thank you all for joining us. Don't forget to read the original Education Gadfly at edexcellence.net. Till next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.